Hi, I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
We're from the podcast Guide to the Unknown, where we only talk about scary stuff and have a good time doing it.
Come join the scary fun, everyone.
Wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find Guide to the Unknown.
This is the Bloody Disgusting Podcast Network.
What the frig? Where am I going?
The ravine near Highway 11 and Ryerson Avenue.
Boils and ghouls, lock your doors and strap yourselves in. From Los Angeles, California, Bloody Disgusting presents the Boo Crew Podcast. Horror news, commentary, reviews, interviews, and more. With your hosts, Lauren and Trevor Shand and Leone D'Antonio.
Hey, I'm Trevor, and on behalf of myself, Lauren, and Leo, welcome to the Boo Crew Podcast, episode 267. The time of release. It's a new episode each day this week. This time around, FX master, genius writer, director, and returning friend of the show, Steve Kostanski. This guy is amazing. His latest project is the much anticipated TV series Day of the Dead, and it's available October 15th on Sci-Fi. If you're listening to this when it comes out, that means tomorrow or later tonight, whichever comes first in your world. Steve directs the first four episodes and executive produces the show, as well as being part of the team responsible for the out-of-control gore and zombies, and it is so much disgusting fun, the likes of which you have never seen before, which is very much on brand for Steve. Find out what this new series has in common with George A. Romero's original classic, tear into the insane special effects gags, and so much more. Also, Steve reveals his favorite Friday the 13th films and his dream to create one alongside his Astron 6 collective. This is the film we all want to see. We catch up on the success of his brilliant Psycho Goreman and if we'll get a follow-up, and so much more. Episode 267 with Steve Kostanski is now playing.
This is Steve Kostanski. Frig off and listen to the Boo Crew.
What's the one thing that we all have in common? We all die. Until this morning.
Scream, that's all we need.
Another victim crawls onto the gurney for a Boo Crew autopsy.
Joining the Boo Crew via the Speakeasy Studios, a returning guest to the show. He is a twisted, evil, mad genius filmmaker and a virtuoso creature and practical effect master, working on films including The Haunting in Connecticut, Todd and the Book of Pure Evil, The Wrong Turn and Resident Evil franchise, Brian Fuller's acclaimed Hannibal series, Del Toro's Crimson Peak, Suicide Squad, It, Star Trek, and more. His own films have received multiple awards from festivals all over the world. As part of Winnipeg's Rogue Astron 6 Collective, the spirit of inventiveness is baked into everything he does. Manborg, Father's Day, 2016's Unforgettable, The Void, Leprechaun Returns, and the most over-the-top, all-out cinematic attack, the likes of which we've never experienced before, this past year's Psycho Goreman. At time of release, his latest project premieres October 15th on Sci-Fi. It's a TV series, Day of the Dead. We are honored to welcome the illustrious Steve Kostanski.
Yeah. Yay. Wow, thank you for that epic wrestling intro. I feel like there should be fireworks going off.
Oh, just you wait.
Dude, I love the setup. Where are you at, right? Is this your workshop, your office? What are we looking at?
This is my basement shop right now. It's a bit of a mess. I've got a few top secret things I'm working on that are just out of frame. But yeah, it's I've moved into a bigger space, so now I actually have a little home shop to work and do my effects and things. So, yeah, and I got all my buddies behind me.
Yes, yes, you do.
That guy from PG that I realized I never actually gave a name to, Fetus Monster from The Void, and our buddy Jason.
Was it Jason nice. Just a self-made project? Was it from used in a film? What was it from?
A friend of mine a few years back wanted to be Jason for Halloween, so I took it as an excuse to make a Jason. My goal is I want to make a bunch of the different Jasons. So this one behind me is like kind of my riff on Jason Goes to Hell. He's like pretty bulbous and messed up looking. I've actually got a part two Jason that's molded, but I haven't cast yet. I really want to do a part four and maybe a part six because, yeah. It would just be fun to have all of us.
Hell yeah. What's your favorite installment of Friday the 13th?
My favorite? That's tough. Actually, no, not really. I think two and six are my favorites.
Wow, really?
But that'll change, I'm sure, like in a month or something. Like with the Astron guys, we're always trying to rank them as like the best. And I feel like I'm constantly changing my opinion because that's just the nature of those movies. They're like, it's kind of whatever you're feeling in the moment. Like sometimes I'm feeling a little Takes Manhattan. And sometimes if I'm being real weird, I'm feeling Jason Goes to Hell. But yeah, I love part six is like, feels the most like what I would do if I made a Friday the 13th. It's like pretty fun and like almost Sam Raimi-esque at times. Like it's very much that late 80s kind of like horror comedy vibe that I really, it has like a good energy. And I like that Tommy Jarvis is basically the Dr. Loomis of the Friday the 13th, which was an element I thought was always missing. I like that he kind of brings the tension and the exposition to the story. But then also I've recently fallen in love with part two because it, like watching one and two back to back, it's such a like jump in quality. And it's crazy to me that two is directed by like Steve Miner, who had never directed before. Like that was his first movie and it's like really cinematic. It's well shot. Just on a purely like technical level, there's like really nice blocking and staging of sequences, stuff that, yeah, like my first movies I was not doing. So yeah, I find it just a really effective slasher and has some really creepy moments. That shot of Jason behind Ginny is the main girl in part two.
I think. Believe it's so. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Amy Steele. Yeah.
Yeah, she's in Jason's cabin and you see him through the window behind her, like running up to the house. And it's horrifying. Just like here, like seeing him silently running up is just such a nightmare image. I think it's like one of the peak moments of the whole franchise. So yeah, two and six today.
Have you thought of what you would do if you had your fingers in that franchise?
Oh yeah. I've had to like stop thinking about it because it's like too depressing because I know it'll never happen.
I don't know about that, man. Things are happening with the licensing right now, I've been hearing.
That's true. I guess anything is possible at this point, but yeah, like I wish that they got to a point where every year they just gave a different filmmaker a shot and like continuity be damned, like just let them make the Friday the 13th they want to make. Cause that's essentially what the franchise is. Like each movie
really became that
stylistically wild compared to the other ones. So yeah, I would love to take a crack at it. I kind of feel like I would have to do it with Astron 6. If I did that by myself, I'm pretty sure they would all murder me. So the idea of an Astron 6 Friday the 13th, excites me.
It would be insane, dude. I would love to see that so much, man. Well, before we get into Day of the Dead, I wanted to ask you about what have the legions of fans that have welcomed Psycho Goreman with such open arms done to your creativity and your trajectory as far as that character and possible other incarnations of him will unveil themselves?
Well, I mean, it's a legitimate stress because I want to follow that up with something that delivers. And so just the more people love the movie and want more from it, more I'm like, oh shit, I gotta like really deliver a thing. And I'm trying. I'm working on it. It's surprisingly complicated trying to get this off the ground. Sequel issues, like rights and things, like just trying to like make all the things line up and also just find the time to sit down and write the damn thing. Cause I'm so busy with effects work and stuff right now, but I hope to get something going soon. In the meantime, there is our comic book Kickstarter from Lethal Comics that we have going right now, which that should whet people's appetite for PG in a pretty satisfying way. It's an anthology comic that is kind of referencing those Star Wars anthology novels from the 90s. There'd be like Tales from Mos Eisley's Cantina, Tales from Jabba's Palace, Tales of the Bounty Hunters. So this is like all the stories that the Galactic Council has of their like near misses with PG. And it's just, the idea is it's like takes place during the movie. So it's like the council sitting there waiting for stuff to happen with Pandora. And they're all like just passing the time being like, well, what was the last time you encountered PG? And then like each character goes off on a crazy wild story about what happened. And it's really turned into like a heavy metal style, like anthology comic where we've just got so many different artists and personalities and writers like taking a crack at it, that it's great because you're just getting a really rich universe, like building on the universe in a really interesting way and letting people kind of run with the concepts.
So like someone will take like a Cassius 3000 and build a whole backstory, or do you like supervise?
I mean, I wrote kind of like a rough outline for the whole thing, and I definitely have like specific premises that I threw at them for like each character. I was like, this one is a heist movie, like this one is like a romantic comedy, or like I threw kind of like tones and vague ideas at people, and they took it and expanded on it. So it's awesome. I get to have that, a little bit of that like George Lucas control, where I don't actually have to do all the work. I can just like sign off on things and give approvals. And because it's a comic book, I don't have to stay up till 4 a.m. building creatures that need to be on set the next day. So it's like, I'm really happy with how it's going. The Kickstarter like made its money in the first 24 hours and is now just raking in cash. So I don't know, maybe comics is the world I need to transition.
Oh, that's incredible. Yes. And then right. all these different, like, I've seen there's a series of like craft beers that just got released, like Psycho Warman beers and limited action figures. So what has been like, is all that stuff like derivative creations of fans who just go ahead and make the stuff and then show you, or are you involved in any of that stuff? Or is there anything that you've seen that you're just like, this is fucking amazing?
I mean, there's definitely, there's like a whole fan art component where people are just making stuff and tagging me in it. And I love it. I love like every day there's some new weird thing that somebody decides to draw or paint or make. And that's really fantastic. But also the other side of it is like all this stuff is like legitimate licensed stuff, like where we've worked out deals with people. And again, it gives me a little bit of that George Lucas vibe on like the smallest scale possible, but like just being able to be a complete sellout and be like, yeah, let's have toys, let's have beer, let's have comic, let's just have all the nonsense, because that's what's important with these things to me. That's how you build the universe out in a fun way, is also in the ancillary merch that's outside of the actual story of the film itself. And so, yeah, really great.
It's brilliant, man. Brilliant. So we'll go to Day of the Dead. So, you know, George Romero has gone on record saying that that's his favorite one of the ones he did, right? From back in 85. And the story is about military survivors in an underground bunker as the zombie apocalypse kind of rages on outside. I'm curious, as maybe you could shed some light on this. Maybe I have no idea, but I've always been curious. Why, out of all the films in the original series, do we get remakes? We got two sequels of Day of the Dead. We got Bloodline and Contagion, in addition to the new TV show. Besides just the fact that the original is astounding, are there unique like IP rights at play with Day that Night and Dawn don't have that you know of?
I mean, I don't want to speak out of turn, and this is just me speaking purely as a horror fan that reads things on the internet, but my impression that I get is that Day of the Dead as an IP was purchased and is separate from Night and Dawn. As far as I know, Night is public domain still because they're constantly making Night of the Living Dead stuff. But as far as I know, the rights for Day of the Dead have kind of been floating around for a while, and that's why you've had so many different iterations of it. And again, that's just me, horror fan, speculating. There was no like real discussion with me and Cartel, the company that produced this, as far as like where the rights even came from. I just got an email from Sci-Fi Channel being like, hey, we're doing a Day of the Dead show, you want to do it? And I was just like, yeah, yes, please.
Fuck yeah. The way they did the gore and practical effects gags in the original film, I gotta say, I'm a huge gore hound. When I saw Day of the Dead back in 85, I mean, I'd obviously seen it in the 90s when I was a little bit older on video, but it was the first time I gagged while seeing a horror film, when Captain Rhodes was getting dismembered and attacked by all these zombies and choke on them doing that scene. What impact did Savini's work and all that have on you seeing that first Day of the Dead?
Well, it's kind of a funny story because being in Canada, we had available to us the Canadian cut of Day of the Dead, which is like a weirdly massacred version of the movie where they lifted out all the big gags, like the Rhodes death, Steel when he like blows his brains out. Basically, anytime a zombie headshot happens, they didn't even try to like finesse it to make it seem intentional. It would be like a character like pulls a gun out and points it, and then there'd be an awkward cut, and then they would just put their gun back and be like, now the zombie's gone. And so I recommend trying to track it down because it's so weird. And that was my first time watching Day of the Dead. So watching this butchered cut, I was just like, what even is this movie? Like coming off of Dawn of the Dead, which is such a masterpiece, to then go to this, which is great and I love it, but watching this version really like neutered it in a weird way and having no payoff at all. So it was actually a while before, I think actually like it was the DVD that I have. There was like an Anchor Bay DVD that had the little like fold out bub on the front. That DVD was the uncut version. So that was me finally getting to experience the movie properly. And then when I did, I was like, oh, this is awesome. And I had years of anticipation, like, oh, I hear that there's like a proper version of this movie I can watch. And finally getting to see it after like theorizing on like what the gags looked like, it really delivered. It was so satisfying. I love the one character that's getting torn apart and like, it's like his like eye kind of pops out.
Yes,
like,
yes.
Like, zombie like pulls his skin, yes. Like at his forehead, and then it's just like one bugged out eye. I love the other guy like with the vocal cords, like his head getting pulled and his vocal cords like stretching, like the audio getting all distorted was super cool. So yeah, that's my like weird history with Day of the Dead, where it's like it you know, started off being this disappointment where I was like, oh, is this all this is? Like, it's kind of like, to go back to Friday the 13th endlessly, part 7, where it feels like that movie is compromised pretty seriously. And so with Day of the Dead felt the same thing, where I was like, I don't feel like I'm watching the movie I'm like the way it's
right, you're meant to be. Yeah.
So finally getting to see it was really an exciting experience. And yeah, just was so satisfying. And I've been in love with it ever since.
The Boo Crew will be right back.
This is the sound of a normal heart. Now, listen to that same heart subjected to a night of total terror. Night of the Living Dead. The dead who live on living flesh. The dead whose haunted souls hunt the living. The living whose bodies are the only food for these ungodly creatures. Night of the Living Dead. A bizarre adventure in fear, an experience in shock more shattering than your strangest nightmare. Night of the Living Dead. A night of total terror.
The TV series is really kind of a remix, I guess, of a lot of elements from the film. In your mind, how is it connected beyond, you know, the Easter eggs and, you know, name coincidences and all that kind of fun stuff for the fans to discover?
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly something like when it was presented to me in the like the initial conversations, my first thought was like, do you have people in a mind for 10 episodes? Like, is that a thing people would want to watch? But then when I read it, I was like, oh, okay, this is like a totally new, fresh thing. And that got me excited because I was like, great, I would rather go way off in a different direction than just copy the beats of something. Like, it's like, if you're just going to retread that ground, like, why are you even bothering to do it at that point? Like, I'd rather take a bold risk than a safe retread. So, yeah, I mean, it definitely goes in different directions, and it might be jarring at first, like diving into this thing where there's like certain similarities and characters that are like share some DNA with the original movie. But I feel like it's more of a tonal thing and a broader, like, kind of Romero tone in terms of like just the feeling and the vibe of his movies, at least on my episodes. And what I was trying to do is like, I want to just try and instill that and have it feel like more of a classic horror movie, and not necessarily meaning like 80s schlock or anything, but just feel like just the way the original Dawn of the Dead or Day of the Dead felt to me. Yeah. It just has a certain flavor, and I want to try to capture that like visually. I specifically had a mandate of like, I don't want any like shaky cam stuff. Like, I was trying to get it away from like a lot of like modern techniques and keep it in a classical kind of visual style, and like, yeah, just try and give it as much of that vibe as I possibly could. So, I mean, I don't think the show necessarily has any hard connections to the original movie, but I think it's like spiritually and just in terms of like little tidbits here and there, I think help give it the same flavor.
Right.
Romero's classic stuff.
No, totally. Also, the way that it infuses that social commentary and all that great stuff that Romero did with all those movies as well is definitely ripe in there too. Leo, jump in with your question, man.
Yeah, there's so much blood and guts and gore in this. I love it, man. On the series, are the zombie effects and kills all practically done with makeup and prosthetics, or is it a mix of practical and visual effects?
Yeah, it's all the gags and stuff for practical. I'm trying to remember. This is last year at this point, so I'm trying to remember all the gags that we did. Like, the mandate was to like do them practically, and if we need to enhance a bit in post, we can. But as far as I know, I don't think we really had to do much. Like, maybe like painting out a wire here or there or something. But yeah, all those gags were happening on set, and it got very messy. And that's just the way I like it.
Yeah,
so awesome, so awesome.
How do you circumvent the challenges of injecting new life into one of the most important elements of the show, the zombies themselves, when you are reframing them for an audience who's maybe sat through 10 episodes or 10 seasons of The Walking Dead? What was your approach to revitalizing those?
Well, I think a lot of that credit needs to go to Jed and Scott, the showrunners, who really were the ones kind of overseeing this whole thing. And I was working in tandem with them on designing the zombies, but on the page, and I don't want to get into spoilers, but there's definitely like some explanations in regards to the zombies, and maybe explanation is the wrong word. It's more like raising more questions about what they are and why they exist in the first place. And I thought that was a great jumping off point to try and add a little bit newer life to the concept of the zombie. And so that extended into the practical effects and working with Todd Masters to like kind of redesign the classic zombie was a lot of fun. And he definitely brought his A game and brought his 30 plus years of experience in the industry, making these things fun and interesting and giving each zombie a personality and giving them like making them memorable and not just like just a wash of muddy brown blood covered things, you know. Like, he made a point of like giving them each their moment, and working with Jed and Scott and Todd Masters, we all kind of came up with what we wanted to do with the zombies, how we wanted to make them feel fresh and exciting, but also pay tribute to the classics. There's lots of like visual references in the zombies to other classic zombies, and yeah, so it was super fun. I love that kind of thing. Like, even on something like Leprechaun, like redesigning a classic character like that, like, I think that's the fun of working in a franchise or doing a kind of like soft reboot remake of a thing, is like remixing what's already there. Because there's no reason to just have the same thing again. Like, take it and rethink it and try to give it a fresh coat of paint in an interesting way.
And we saw some of those zombies, right? In the episode one, there's like a flag zombie. Like, I call him a flag zombie. He's got the flag pulled through him. He's walking around. And then you do really cool takes on some very key zombies from 85's Day of the Dead that are really fun to kind of point out and see, which I don't want to spoil because it's part of the fun. But anyway, what were you going
to
say?
I want to ask my most favorite question, which is, did you get to keep anything from the production?
Yeah, I think I got a couple heads still in one of my suitcases. I mean, all that stuff is out. We shot it out in BC. So I think Todd still got all the molds and stuff out there. Because who knows, season two, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, actually also think I have some zombie wardrobe stored away somewhere because I was planning on maybe shooting an insert at one point and then we didn't need to. So this, long story short, is... yeah, I got a bunch of moldy zombie crap.
awesome.
You go for the arsenal.
That I should probably deal with.
Nice.
Speaking of making this stuff and everything, during being in pre-production and production during lockdown, did any of that inspire new ways of doing things as far as putting this together that you didn't have to even consider before?
Yeah, I mean... It really just, the pandemic definitely introduced a lot of logistical problems where we're trying to figure out, like, how can we safely have crowds of zombies, like, attacking crowds of extras, you know? Like just trying to figure out how to do this in a way that, you know, isn't going to harm anyone and spread this virus around. We were one of the first productions to come back in BC back in 2020. So... there was a lot of like kind of feeling it out as we went, figuring out like what is the safest way to do this. And it's just a lot of just being on top of like cleanliness, like the prosthetics team, like people just being, keeping their hands sanitized and wearing masks and cleaning their brushes and kind of like if background is wearing background zombie masks, like making sure it stays specific to one person and people aren't passing around different masks. And yeah, just like really everything like slowed down a little bit, not as much as I was expecting, but more time had to be taken to just make sure like we're being safe and responsible as we're shooting, because yeah, it's a lot of people on set. And like, there's no way around that unless you're making a thing where it's like two people in a room, like you're just always going to have crowds of people. And so trying to keep everyone distanced and masked and things. So, you know, it's not exactly a fun layer to add on top of the already stressful process of making a production, but I think we navigated it really well.
In creating the tone for this show by directing the first four episodes, what was the baseline you wanted to instill in its overall spirit going forward? And then how did you kind of supervise it in your executive producer role? Were you there to consult and kind of steer it in one direction? Was that your position?
I mean, the direction and the tone of the show very much came from Jed and Scott. Like, it's very much their baby. And I just want to help facilitate that and kind of work on how to bring my skills to the table to enhance what they wanted to do. So yeah, for me, like, I feel like I had a lot of input just on like the visuals, how the show looked. Our choice to be a little more composed and not go into shaky handheld world was a thing that I really pushed hard for. Like, I did not want this to feel like Saving Private Ryan. I wanted it to feel like a classic horror movie. And so really like keeping that going and trying to like give it a layer of class visually, even though there's lots of wacky, crazy shit going on. Like, I wanted it to look as good as possible. So yeah, that was, I feel like, my big contribution was just trying to set the visual tone of like what this show was. And we were always talking about like what can we do to make this stand out? So when you're flipping channels, you stumble upon this or you see like the trailer or something, you just know like that's Day of the Dead, the show, like giving it a bit of a signature visually was really important to me.
And were all the gore gags and everything that we see there as far as zombie attacks and stuff, were those all straight off the script on paper, or did you get freedom to add some stuff in and play in that world?
I mean, in some cases it was like, we have this much time to do a thing, whatever happens, happens. And we lucked out in that a lot of them worked out really well. For me, I just enjoyed the challenge of like seeing what's on the page, seeing the ambition on the page, and figuring out like how in the like time we have and the resources we have, do we execute this? Cause TV moves at a pace that's a lot faster than feature films. And so I didn't have the luxury of being like, I'm going to shoot inserts for the next 6 months, like PG, like I'm going to go to the shop and just shoot whatever. It was like, we had to get as much as we could on the day. And so trying to plan things as meticulously as I could with my first AD Quincy, trying to just lock down like exactly how we're shooting gags, and also communicating that to the prosthetics team, because being on that side of it, working on shows, when people don't communicate exactly like how they want to shoot it, like what is the purpose of this shot? What are we trying to achieve here? It just slows everything down. So I tried to hone in on every gag and be like, these are the angles we're doing. Everything beyond this is like fair game if you need to hide blood rigging or something. And just trying to be as concise as possible just made everything run smoother and made the gags work out great. And yeah, it was a lot of working in tandem with other departments, special effects and wardrobe, just to kind of bring it all home and tie it all together.
Last question. What do you have on deck?
I mean, this year has mostly just been doing effects. Like as we spoke last time, I was doing The Boys in Umbrella Academy, did a little bit of stuff on Firestarter. And right now I'm not allowed to talk about the projects I'm working on, but yeah, I'm just doing effects in my basement and writing stuff. And it's just endless meetings. The grind of a director searching for his next project is just that constant back and forth and waiting for answers from people and stuff. There's a bunch of interesting things that I hope pan out and will be real exciting to talk about next year if they happen.
Oh yeah, man, you're a madman. Yes. We love it, Steven. Thank yes. you so much for spending time with us today. We're sorry we ran yeah. over, but you're an absolute pleasure, man. We love it.
Thank you very much for having me. Let's do this again when one of those previously mentioned projects goes forward.
Oh yeah.
Sure. Yes.
Awesome, man. Thanks again, awesome. Steven. You're the best.
That was the Boot Crew Podcast, episode 267. Special thanks to our guest, Steve Kostanski. Follow @kill_Kostanski on Instagram. And at time of release, check out his new show, Day of the Dead, available on Sci-Fi October 15th. Production tracks for this one provided by Powerman 5000. Till next time, it is the Boot Crew saying, sweet screams.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Boo Crew Podcast. Haunt the Boo Crew at TalesFromTheBooCrew.com. Tales from the Boo Crew on Facebook and Instagram. Follow us on Twitter at Tales from the Boo. The Boo Crew is Lauren and Trevor Shand and Leone D'Antonio. The Boo Crew is produced by Lauren Shand, chopped and sliced by Trevor Shand. The Boo Crew is a TSP creation, part of the Bloody Disgusting Podcast Network.
Bye.
The Bloody Disgusting Podcast Network, home of the Boo Crew. For horror-centric interviews, SCP archives, weekly full-cast storytelling, horror queers, genre commentary from an LGBTQ perspective, and creepy. For disturbing and terrifying creepypastas. Listen free wherever you stream audio and at bloodydisgusting.com/podcasts.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.
Every town has its dark history. Hometown Ghost Stories is a paranormal podcast that goes town to town all across the globe, exploring the world's most haunted places, tapping into the dusty archives and the darkest corners to bring you the most terrifying stories of real people and their harrowing experiences. Hometown Ghost Stories dives into the history of haunted locations and investigates why and how these places earned their terrifying reputation. Rob, Dave, and Jesse go live every Tuesday night after an uninterrupted documentary-style breakdown on the case, followed by an open discussion with live viewers. Subscribe today to listen to Hometown Ghost Stories on your preferred podcast platform or watch the video version on YouTube and now Spotify. Head on over to the Bloody FM podcast network and check out Hometown Ghost Stories, if you're brave enough.